You're coming back and coming yet?
Somehow, yes. Otherwise, I don't know what it was. Then, but when that business cleared up, he got a job in Compton where they were manufacturing automobile tires. I think it's called a Samson tire. And that business, apparently after a comparative short time, it faded up too. And I think my father was the secretary treasurer of that company, and he had the keys to the safe. But as a child, I remember him saying something about that he held the keys to the safe of that business, and I think they hadn't paid him his salary or something, and he said that he, at least he had the key to the safe or something, I don't know what it's all about. But then he went into a business again with the canning fish business, and I don't know what the name of the company was, maybe the Long Beach tuna canning business, which is out on Water Street, very far west of, as far as you could go on Water Street. I think it was just past the Craig Shipbuilding Yard. And in this business, he had several partners. There was a Mr. Bismarck Housel. And now, I don't know whether my father put in that they went together on it, or my father bought into it, or what. I don't know. But anyhow, he was set up in this business with Mr. Housel's, and there were some other associates in that, too. Now, where my father got the money, I don't know. But how much he put up, I don't know. But his father was a very wealthy man and very generous, so he could have given him the money, although there's no mention of it in his diary. But he could well have given him thousands of dollars for it. But with that business thrived all right. And World War number one came along, and the business was good. And later that business changed hands and merged with some other businesses. They moved their office to Los Angeles at what was called a central building, right across the street from the Pacific Electric Depot. But then they found that they were too far away from the the plant, and their telephone bill was tremendous, so they moved back down to Terminal Island in a building that had been the factory of the Nelson Kettle Company. So they were in the MK plant, and there were other mergers. At that time they had two or three counties in San Pedro and one in San Diego. But that business at this time apparently had a very interesting turn. There's Mr. Frank Van Camp, who had started pork and beans business in Indianapolis. And Mr. Frank Van Camp was a very fine, an exceptionally fine person, and a very good businessman. But somehow, I guess he got in kind of over his head in Indianapolis with the Beans Company, and there were some shrewd persons who bought him out or bid him in or something. But they got the pork and beans business away from Mr. Van Camp. And Mr. Van Camp, so I heard, was then broke, whatever that means. But he had such good reputation that apparently he came to California, to Southern California, and the American Can Company let him $1 million. Let him have $1 million. Maybe he borrowed it or on top credit. But with this money, he started a reorganization of the tuna company, and push it, it really fried then. So it was the Van Camp Seafood Company until probably 1960, somewhere along in there, and then it was bought out by the Purina Company. And of course my father died about that time, and so I don't know about what happened to Purina Company. Too much about that.
Do you know anything else about
the business
operated? Did they
go get the
fish?
Oh, well, yes, they camped the fish. There's different kind of tuna fish. But the choice is called albacore. And that fish would be found in the ocean here. And the boats would go sometimes north, but sometimes south, where the water was warmer. And they would fish way down south. And then they went out from San Diego. And San Diego plant was good because the fish were plentiful off that area. And the tuna fish was a summer run, and then they canned sardines in the winter time. And sardines, of course, were very inexpensive comparatively, cheaper, but they could be used for the, well, a lot of people ate sardines. I like them too. And they're cheap. And they could be used for animals, cats and dogs, sardines. But anyhow, the sardine business would help to keep the business in making money year round. But then, the fish school seemed to go farther south, and they have canneries in way down in the tropical waters. Off some of the islands down that way, I've forgotten where they were, but they were maybe in Central America. And then the fish schools seemed to change, and they were catching fish around Japan. And they would catch the fish in Japan, freeze them, and then put them on great ocean freighters and bring them in here this way. I don't know, the business seemed to be quite changeable then.
Did you know about, like, the Curtis Company?
Yes, there was a Curtis County Company as well. And they were in San Pedro as well. And my father spoke with the Curtis Company, and that was a good company. I don't think there was any merger between the Curtis and the Van Camp Company. There was a Curtis Company too. Van Camp also branched out in canning vegetables, I think, and olives. They tried to can olives, and they had a place to can olives up in Los Angeles, south part of Los Angeles. And I think about the first time they had any olives on the market, they were found to have botulism. And I think about their first venture in canning olives was people died of botulism. So that business lasted just a flash. It was over right away. I think the Curtis Company canned other things besides fish. I'm not sure. Also, toward the 50s, there was also in San Pedro what they call a French sardine company, which was owned by somebody named Bogdanovich. And Mr. Bogdanovich apparently admired the Van Camp Company very much and had his operation set up, just copied Van Camp's plant, and it copied the office. It copied the office, I think, just practically made a duplicate of their office rooms for his the French sardine company.
Your father then didn't really use his education.
No, he didn't. He didn't go into electronics at all. Well, apparently after he graduated from school at Harvard, he went to Watertown, New York, and to work for a while, and did something, I don't know what it was. But I don't know what happened, whether the business wasn't good, or whether he got sick or homesick or something, but he came on down to Greenfield, Tennessee, where his father was living, and started the Greenfield electric light system, and also must have been for the utility department, because he did the electricity and the water works, and he had to go out and fix leaking water pipes or water pumps or something day or night. And then he worked in his father's office as bookkeeper too. He may have had all this going on at the same time. But he never did anything in electronics. But he was very interested in electronics, and as I said, he was a very intelligent person, and he graduated with the highest honors of the class. And in his class, he had other classmates, I think someone named DeForest was in his class, and someone named Dole Pineapple was in his class. It was either in his class or his brother's class. And my father used to, he made radios, and he made his own television set. And also when he came to in Long Beach in the days of television and electricity, there was somebody, a ward, who had a television or electricity or radio store or repair. And once in a while a person would call up my father, mistaking him for the television or the radio repairman, and would ask him about his electrical problems. And my father would tell him, well, your problem is thus and so, but I'm not the man you think I am, but I'll tell you what your problem is. He knew.
What do you first remember about Long Beach?
Well, I first remember about Long Beach is when we came to our house at 1703 Atlantic Avenue. I remember the day we moved in, because we were in the house, but we had, I guess, some furniture in there, but we didn't have any groceries in yet. And so for that day in unpacking, my mother gave us bread and butter for lunch. And the bread was sort of a napkin roll, they call it. It looks like a croissant. One of those, and I remember how good it tastes. I thought, they're just delicious. And then we lived in that house for a very short time, but that was during the influenza epidemic about that time. And I remember as a child riding on my tricycle down to the corner of 17th and Atlantic. The sidewalk was paved, but the street was not. Atlantic Avenue was not paved, it was dirt. And I'd sit on my tricycle and see the processions coming of funeral processions up Atlantic Avenue. Horse-drawn processions. One right after another. Going up from mortuaries downtown to the cemeteries out to Long Beach, I guess it would be called there's a cemetery on Willow.
Yeah.
And they probably were going out that way, up Atlantic Avenue to the cemetery. And I remember seeing all those processions going up the street. Blue people.
And you said you didn't live there very long?
No, because I think we lived there for maybe a year or less. Because across, just next door, north, or to the west, up the alley to the west, a new house had been built, which is 541 East 7th Street, East 17th Street. The house is still there. And we moved into that house. We rented the house. It was a 7-room, 2-story house, brand new. Rented it for $25 a month. And I lived there until about 1918. But here's a room, a nice two-story house. No heat in the house at all. They didn't think the heat was necessary. There was a gas pipe into the fake fireplace in the front so we could put in a gas heater. And we could turn on the gas kitchen stove, and that would be the house would be heated. And upstairs, the heat would have to go up the staircase. But three of those bedrooms upstairs were cold, especially the north bedroom where I slept was very, very cold room.
And you were going to school?
I started the schools with the Burnett School. We walked. I had started the school before we left Tennessee, but didn't finish the year, and so I started the first grade at Burnett School, and we'd walk from 17th Street up to Hill Street to Burnett School. And there was a sidewalk that was paved, I believe, mostly paved at least, but the street was not, it was mud. But we'd walk up the school, and a boy named Warner, and he was at grammar school. He was just a young boy, but I thought he was just a grown man. And he'd ring the bell. And when school would start, the bell would ring. And if we heard the bell ring, we knew we were late to school, so we'd run the rest of the way. But I started to burn at school about 1916, I guess. And the water would run down the hill from Signal Hill down Hill Street and collected a hill and a paddock. And one day, we could not cross Hill Street because the water was so deep, but they had boats up there, little rowboats, where they came from, I don't know. But they'd take the children across the street in a rowboat, and I crossed the Hill Street in a rowboat to go to Burnett School. That school building has been destroyed and another one built.
Do you remember what the old one looked like?
I don't know what it looked like.
Could you describe it?
Well, it was a two-story building. Of course, the first story was the ground floor. Really didn't count because although you could enter from the level of the ground level, and there were classrooms along there, the main staircases went from the ground up to what would be the next floor above. That was the main floor. And there was a floor above that, too. It was quite a big, pretty imposing building. And the floors were wooden and were oiled. And I remember the smell of this cottonseed or whatever kind of oil was that they oiled the floors with, the wooden floors.
And was it a big enough school or if it was a separate first grade?
Oh, yes. It was a big building. It had several floors and had gone up to at least the fifth grade and had several rooms on each floor. But the next year I went to the second grade, I think, and that was upstairs room. And in fact, there's a lot of population in there, so they had bungalows built on the ground for more pupils. And I went to that school, and one day they announced that the American Avenue School was on fire. That was the school originally of a high school at between 8th and 9th on American Avenue. That building was built in 1898, I believe, and later it was the high school was moved out to 16th and Atlantic, but the old high school was the American Avenue School, and it burned down. And I was at the Burnett School, and the school ground had around it a big wire. I think they call it chain link fence. But we climbed way up on that chain link fence, and we could see the I think I saw the flames, but I'm not sure. Smoke from the North and Ivy School. Because in those days, there weren't too many high buildings in town, and not very many big trees either, so I guess you could see from a long way. But soon thereafter, we moved to 11th Street.
It's going to move.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything else around
in
that
school?
Was there a store?
Yes, so a county corner across from the school, there was a store, which was, I think it was a drug store. And I think just south there was a building or something. And there were houses all along the way, but after Hill Street, across from the school, there were a few houses, but Before Baddock Avenue got as far north as thought that it had been Willow, the road gave out. Those little dirt paths. After north of Hill Street, just a dirt path began about 100 yards north of Willow. Just a dirt path.
And do you know if there's a post office there?
There's a post office. I don't know.
And did the train stop?
Oh, the train stopped. Burnett Station. The train came down Burnett Station. There's a train depot there at Burnett Station, which I don't remember a thing about post office there. I don't.
Maybe
post office. I don't know about post office.
You know, there's
an early notice there? At 17th and Atlantic, there was when we moved into the big house, next door to that west was another house, very similar. A Mateen lived, but I don't remember too much about him. Except in the morning, he'd go out to grind the feed for some chickens, and I'd hear the motor grinder machine about daylight or before daylight. And then north of that, I don't know, but at the corner was some people named Harshberger. Mr. Harshberger worked for the water company. I went across the street from the people named Knott, K-N-O-T-T, Knott or Knott. It is not the Knott of Knott's Dairy Farm family, but Mr. Knott was he was in a real estate business, I guess, and he moved out to Lake Elsinore. And
this town
50 by 150 feet.
So there's people around there with farms?
No. There weren't. The 17th Street was not paved. It had tile surface. And perhaps Atlantic Avenue had a tile surface. But across the street from the high school, on the corner of 16th and Atlantic, on the northwest corner, about the quarter of the whole block, was the place where the city kept its mules. And hauling wagons and carriages, and but they were old, and there were a few horses, their own mules up there, the old wagons. There was one or two old carriages, but their porcelain was all coming out of it, and they were not using it at all, and let it all rotten off the street. But that was where the mules were kept planting.
I'm sorry, did you move before the high school was
built? No, that's the present high school. It was built when we were there. The main building. And then it had the main building, and there were two buildings beside. And I don't think those buildings were built. Just the main building had the dome in the center with the curved driveway. And in this curved driveway, there'd be about maybe three automobiles parked. They had three of the professors came in automobiles. But my goodness, by the time I was high school there, not everybody had an automobile, but later on I think they all had about two automobiles apiece up there now. So we moved to that area about 1915. I don't know when the high school was built. But the auditorium of the high school was built about 1932, I believe. And then apparently the earthquake came in 33. But the auditorium stood the earthquake very well. And one of the reasons is because when that auditorium was being built, one of the professors at the high school, he said he detected in the material that was going into the building was not good, that the cement wasn't right somehow, wasn't right. So they investigated something, and apparently as a result they made sure they made good cement. So the auditorium was built under close supervision to make good workmanship and good material. So it held up all the
instruments. Okay. So then you moved to
Cedar? Yeah, I moved to Cedar Avenue about 1920. Of course, that American Avenue school had been burned down. So I was in the American Avenue district there. So the American Avenue pupils had to go to, that was for the old Pine Avenue school. Pine Avenue and 6th. We went half day. We went afternoons. But the Pine Avenue pupils went mornings. And we went the afternoon. That Pine Avenue school was one of the early schools in Long Beach. It formerly was called Central School, I think. Central Grammar School. And it was built about, it has a record of it. But I went to that old school, old Pine Avenue school. And then when the George Washington Junior High School was rebuilt, at the site of the old American Avenue School, then we transferred up to the George Washington School. And at the time of the transfer, I was in the, starting the fifth grade. And I suppose George Washington had all grades, even had kindergarten too. But apparently in those days, the junior high school began in the fifth grade. Because I started taking junior high school subjects in the fifth grade. Sixth grade. So I went to junior high school for 4 years. And then when I went to high school as a second year, I had already completed 4 semesters of state standards. So I started in the second year. Third year standards.
What was the neighborhood like
around Cedar where you were? Well, that block was pretty much the same as it is now, except there had been, that particular block between 10th and 12th, or it's pretty much the same as far as the buildings and the houses. It's pretty much the same. Uh, Cedar Avenue or Cedar West Side. And I go, that West Side was apparently a good residential district very early. By about perhaps the 10 or 11 or so, the East Side became a very, very good residential district. Around Big Street Park and East 2nd and East 1st Street and all there. So that when we moved over on Cedar Avenue about 1917-18, it was not the best residential district in town. Some people had owned property and had moved out east. But it was a nice neighborhood. It was a good street then. Even old Magnolia, it's